Well, hello everybody. Welcome. I really can't tell you how happy I am to see all of you here. When we first started doing this, this technology for Satsang, I had some misgivings in a sense that I really wasn't sure that this would be suitable for this kind of work. But as time has gone on, and as I don't know how many meetings we've had now, but as the number of meetings increase, and I see all of you showing up, some of you the people I have not seen before, some of you people who have been to every online satsang, I have reason once again to be thankful to the gods of technology for providing us with this incredible opportunity to meet with each other and speak with each other and reflect on what's real without regard to where we are in the world. You know, I have over the past year or so been reflecting on the whole way in which the form and the context that satsang takes has come to pass. You know, in my case, I've been doing this now for, oh, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, and certain characteristics of the form of my satsangs have stayed the same since the beginning. Some have changed, but the overall way in which we conduct these things have pretty much stayed the same. And this isn't a form that I designed or put together or chose. This is the form that Gangaji uses, and it's the form that Papaji used, this form in which we gather together and I speak for a while about whatever occurs to me to speak about, and then take questions and reports and so forth and have conversations with you following my introduction. This is the form, I think, that is pretty much the form that satsang takes with everybody who meets in satsang. Of course, as I said, Gangaji does it this way and Papaji did it this way, but Ramana didn't do it this way. Ramana just sat on a couch in his loincloth and read the newspaper, and I suppose that from time to time people would bother him, interrupt him, and disturb him with their questions and their concerns and their ideas. So I was thinking today and reflecting, giving some fresh thought to the way in which I do these things and to see whether there's any validity to it or value to continuing to do it in the same old way at all. And I see that, well, first of all, I don't have any affection for iconoclastic behavior just for the sake of being rebellious or newfangled. And I see that really, what I seek to do in this time that I spend speaking to you in a context in which you just have to sit there and listen, what I seek to do is to set the context, because context is pretty much everything in this realm. And I am very much aware of the fact that the context that we come to meetings like this expecting is a spiritual context. And we come to meetings like this mostly. I know that this was the case for me when I went to meetings with Gangaji for all those years. We come to the meetings carrying with us an underlying sense of what it is that we're there to discuss or to receive or to consider or to reflect upon. Things having to do with the oneness of all being, or eternal love, or emptiness, or liberation, or enlightenment, or self-realization. Things and ideas and concepts that have that we've received from all of the spiritual transmissions that we have taken in over our entire lifetime, from the time we were children, really. The religious ideas, the spiritual ideas, the hymns, the Bible readings, the sutras, the shastras, the gitas, the teachers, the transmissions, the meditations, the states, the samadhis. And it's pretty much unavoidable. There's pretty much nothing that we can do about it when we gather together in what we think, what we have every reason to expect to be a spiritual context. There's pretty much nothing we can do about the fact that we come carrying this basketful of ideas about the nature of the context that we're in here, a spiritual context, a context in which we seek liberation or freedom or understanding or transformation, a spiritual context. So when I speak with you like this in the beginning of these meetings in satsang, I think that what, and I haven't really thought about it before, but I think that what I'm trying to do is to shake that context and set a new one. Context that doesn't depend upon or require any spiritual component to it at all. It doesn't depend upon or require any particular state of mind, frame of reference at all. It's not that I have anything against the spiritual context or the spiritual expression. I don't. I'm very happy with it. It's just that the context in which I meet with you has very little to do with any of that. It has to do much more with a wide-open, wide-eyed, open-hearted investigation into reality. Not spiritual reality, but reality. Once I say spiritual reality, it means that there's some other kind of reality. Just reality. What's real? And the context, the more particular context in which I come to meet with you is the context that encourages us and encourages our willingness to rid ourselves of all the false ideas about what we are, to rid ourselves of any false belief as to what our nature is in reality. Not in order that we can become spiritual or that we can confirm or deny any spiritual concept or any spiritual idea, but just so that we can see what's real, the simple real, the simple reality of what I am. Not so that I can be transformed or set free or attain some new state of grace, but just to see the truth of it, the actual fact of it. Now, the reason that this is so important to me, and much more important to me than confirming or denying the existence of eternal, immortal self, or love without condition, or freedom, or any of those things. The reason why this is so important to me is because I've seen in my own life and in my own experience that direct seeing of the reality of what I am, automatically, without fail, destroys any false belief about what I am. I've seen this in my own life, and this has nothing to do with anything spiritual. It doesn't confirm or deny anything spiritual. Matters spiritual are beside the point in this adventure of self-inquiry. They are beside the point. They're neither desirable or undesirable. They're just beside the point. In the same way as the matters as to my effectiveness as a human being, or my psychological maturity, or my psychological clarity, all of that too is beside the point here. It's beside the point of spiritual inquiry, or excuse me, self-inquiry. Whether I am rich or poor, whether I am the Buddha or the devil, whether I am filled with understanding and grace or ignorant and hard-headed, all of that is beside the point here. None of that has anything to do with self-inquiry. So when I speak to you like this in the beginning of our meetings, what I seek to do is to establish a context that's free of any activity that's intended to confirm or deny anything at all apart from what I am. Just that, what I am. And what I am, I have discovered in my own experience, and many others who I have been in satsang with have discovered in their own experience, what I am is far too simple, far too ineffable, that for there to be anything whatsoever that can be said about it. So the context that I seek to establish also is a context in which the point is not to come up with some description of the reality of what I am, but only to come to the direct, immediate experience, conscious experience of the reality of what I am. There's nothing I can say about myself. There's nothing I can say about you. There's nothing I can suggest to you that will deepen your understanding of the reality of what you are and thereby give you freedom or liberation or realization or anything else except some new thing to remember and refer to. My only purpose in meeting with you like this, my sole purpose in meeting with you like this, is only to encourage you to trick you, to beg you to look at yourself, to look at the simple reality of yourself, to look at this presence that is, presence is too much to say, but to look at this presence that's never missing, never absent, unchanged, without regard to anything that comes and goes within it. That is always here. That is undeniable, unseeable, ununderstandable, unnameable, but certain. Because I know from my own experience that if you will look at this reality, just look at it. Don't do anything with it, just look at it. If you will look at it often enough, if you will look at it as often as you can, everything else will be taken care of. and the only problem that exists in all of humanity will vanish in you. That problem being the false belief that you are your life, your mind, your thoughts, your desires, your history, your expectations, your hopes, your despair. The false belief that you are anything apart from this certainty of being. And the only reason I care about that is because I know from my own direct experience in this life that as that false belief vanishes, with it vanishes all sense of fear and anxiety about what's happening in your life. All sense of a need to fix anything or change anything or transform anything or transcend anything. And when all that goes, what goes with it is the entire underlying internal warfare that seeks to make you better, to fix you, to destroy bad thoughts, to hold on to good thoughts, and so forth. So that's what I seek to do in these opening remarks. I don't seek to preach to you about, about Buddha mind or sunyata or any of those things. I seek to provide a context in which the only thing that we need concern ourselves with is the possibility of seeing ourselves directly in this moment. And in seeing ourselves, to rid ourselves of the weight of this false belief that I am my life. I don't have any problem with spiritual stuff. You're just beside the point here. We gather together in these meetings that you have every reason to think should be spiritual in nature, but they're not. What we gather here to do is to consider what's real, is to look at what's real, in order that we can rid ourselves of this lie that we are nothing but our lives, our minds, our thoughts. So I don't really have much more than that to say. I would love to speak with you. I would love to hear your questions or your arguments or anything you have to say to me. Okay, your turn.
Okay, we have Antar. He's in Germany, and he wrote you a text message, which I'm going to read here. Dear John, my name is Antar. I come from Germany. I am male and 24 years old. I like to listen to your podcast. I like the way you talk about the self-inquiry. So direct. Since maybe 3 years, I am with Samarpan. I don't know if you know him. He teaches the Bhakti way, total surrender, feeling the feelings. Since I hear your audio satsangs, I practice self-inquiry. When strong feelings come, surrender seems easier for me. The other times I do self-inquiry, or I am just still and do nothing. Is it okay to combine these ways, sometimes surrender, the other time self-inquiry? Thanks and goodbye, Antar.
In order to surrender, there has to be someone separate from you to surrender, or to surrender to. If you can't surrender, then the first thing you must surrender and this is something that I heard from Papaji, the first thing to surrender is the surrenderer. The first and last thing to surrender is the surrenderer. The only thing to surrender is the surrenderer. There is absolutely the practice of bhakti in your life, in your mind, can do no harm. There is no reason whatsoever for you to abandon or to hold on to the practice of bhakti. The truth is that the practice of bhakti or any other spiritual practice is beside the point of self-inquiry. So I suppose that what I'm saying is that of course you can continue your practice of bhakti. You can continue any practice at all. You can abandon any practice at all. No practice can hurt you or help you in any way at all. Just look at yourself whenever it's possible for you to do so. Whether you are practicing bhakti or practicing confusion, in the midst of any of these practices, stop for a second and look at yourself. Just look at yourself, not in order to find out anything, but just in order to fill your consciousness for 1 second with the light of reality. It's the looking that does the work in self-inquiry. And it has, there's no relationship between self-inquiry and any other practice. All other practices are welcome. All other practices can continue or discontinue. Just keep up looking at yourself. Okay?
Okay, now we have Matt calling from Massachusetts. His nickname is Sick Nasty. Okay, Matt, can you speak?
Yeah.
Hi, Mac, Sick Nasty. What can I do for you? This looks like Mac has a connection trouble. Is there anybody else?
Yes, we have Tom calling from...
Hi, Tom.
Hi, John. Hi, Carla. Yeah, I was just calling to try and get some clarification. John, you say that your only task, your only desire when you talk to us is to get us to look at ourselves and get us to realize that that's what we want to do. And that's definitely the case with me now. That part, it's done, you know. It's totally clear to me that that's what I want. And so that bit's there. But it's just... I'm just looking for, you know, you give some pointers like, look at yourself, focus on the certainty of being, the here-ness, and I don't know, I guess I'm just looking for more pointers like that, because these ones seem to lose their helpfulness after a while, I guess, I don't know why.
What are the symptoms of them losing their usefulness?
I guess sometimes when I hear them and I'm doing self-inquiry, I feel like I know I'm not getting anywhere, but I mean metaphorically I'm getting somewhere, and I'm starting to get my mind to focus on what I am, as opposed to ideas of what I am. But after a while, I'll get so used to these concepts that I'm no longer looking at what they're pointing at, I'm just looking at them, if you know what I mean.
Are there not also times when you are, you know, when I'm speaking about self-inquiry, I'm not speaking about attaining some prolonged meditative focus on some experience. I'm speaking about the mostly what I'm speaking about are the kind of glimpses out of the corner of your eye that you catch of this this reality, this presence that is always here, and it's to be expected. It's to be expected with anything at all that we undertake, that even if we undertake some sort of meditative practice that involves one-pointed attention on a physical sensation, say, it is to be expected, and it's in the nature of human mentality, that one-pointedness will last for a while, and then it'll be overcome by the attractiveness of passing thoughts and passing sensations and so forth. Likewise, with the inquiry that encourages us to just catch a glimpse of this reality, the attempt to maintain some prolonged focus on this, which we are never unaware of. There's never a moment when we are unaware of this reality. So the inquiry itself is the momentary passing glimpses of this ever-present awareness that is always here. The attempt to maintain some prolonged connection with it is absolutely bound to fail. It's not a bad thing. It causes no trouble, but it's absolutely bound to fail because the mind is much more interested in the things that move around and come and go and so forth. But no matter whether your conscious attention is caught by a bird flying by in thought or resting for a moment in this awareness, the awareness remains. So the point of the inquiry is not to make awareness the focus of conscious attention permanently, but to see that awareness of reality is never absent. And that comes from these momentary glimpses. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I do, and I'm not experience searching here. I totally get what you mean by that which comes will go, and therefore I don't just want an experience. But the thing is, when I get these glimpses, as you call it, I think what makes them special, because like you say, yes, this awareness is always here and it's always present, so it's not like I'm suddenly seeing that for the first time. But I think what the moment is I'm seeing that I'm not separate from that, that that is who's looking for it. And I wonder, those glimpses that I seem to be having of seeing that my identity is identical to this just awareness, are you constantly in that? Or is it still for you just occasional glimpses?
See, this is really an excellent question, because it also highlights my lack of skill in bringing this practice to you. But it's an excellent question, because the truth of the matter is that, of course, I am always aware of this reality, but so are you. There's no difference.
But are you always aware of it? Are you always aware of it as being your identity?
Yes, but so are you. See, that's the point. The point is not to gain a new identification. That identification is already here. It is absolutely permanent. It's not something new. The point of self-inquiry is to be rid of the false idea that you are something else. And the only way to do that is to accustom yourself to the presence of this ever-present awareness of what I am, and the awareness that I am aware of the reality of what I am. Because it's always here. It's what you are.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you follow that?
I do. The I guess my, and by the way, I wouldn't agree with you that you've not done well in your in talking to us about this. You've done better than anyone else I've heard. But
well, I was saying,
I guess the you know, getting rid of this belief that I'm a person. I mean, if I sit down and I talk to you now, I'll fully admit that I'm not a person. There's no entity here talking to you. But that's obviously not what you mean, is it? You don't mean the intellectual understanding.
No, I don't mean that. And the person who's talking to me and admits that he is not a person is actually deeply sunk in the belief that he is a person.
Yeah, and that's why I'm doing
self-inquiry. And that doesn't matter. You follow me? That's okay.
It doesn't change.
That's beside the point.
Yeah.
That doesn't change. It comes and goes. Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't. What changes is this deep underlying unconscious, unsayable conviction that all that I am is this life. All that I am is this person. That deep underlying conviction gets washed away as you are more and more accustomed to seeing this ever-present awareness of the reality of what you are. It's not gaining an awareness of what your reality. It's just becoming accustomed to the fact that it's always here. And becoming accustomed to the fact that it's always here flows from the intermittent conscious glimpses of it. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I do. And I'm continuing to do that.
That's good. I mean, so we're not trying to rid ourselves of personal identification. We're not trying to rid ourselves of that.
Because the self is not identified with anything, actually, is it?
That's right. That's right.
It is itself, that's, you know, right, itself as it is. It's the,
that's right.
There are thoughts
always
in the mind now that there is a self identified with a person. Whereas
right,
in the mind that you are, or whatever you want to say, there are thoughts that, well, there are not those thoughts. There are thoughts, obviously, but not those particular kinds.
Not those particular kinds, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that just takes time. And you've seen, since you've been practicing it, you've seen, as you, I don't remember exactly what you said in the beginning of this conversation, but I remember you saying something that indicated to me that you've seen that the effect of self-inquiry is manifesting in your life. It just is gradual.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I guess I'm looking for a catalyst. I want to speed this up.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay, too. You know, this is why I was trying not so well to speak about the fact that when I introduce these discussions as an attempt to set the context and to rid ourselves of the idea that it's a spiritual context or any other context apart from reality, because nothing whatsoever that happens within your mind can hurt you or help you. There's no need whatsoever to rid yourself of any thoughts that come and go in your mind, or to fix them, or to make them more spiritual or more closer to reality. Nor is there any real reason to stop trying to do that. Because nothing that happens in your life hurts you or helps you in any way at all. You follow that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep looking.
Yep.
And everything will be taken care of.
I will be.
Okay? Okay?
Thanks, son.
You're very
okay.
Welcome. Anybody else?
Yes, we have Travis calling from San Francisco.
Hello, Travis.
Hi, John.
Hi. What can I do for you?
Well, I wanted to go through four things real quick, and I'm going to make this fast because I don't want to take up too much time. But firstly, I wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your service and for carrying the message of Ramana Maharshi. For a long time, he's been one of my heroes of trying to figure out who I am. And I also wanted to thank you for using the technology in this way. I think that this is a very exciting thing that you're doing, and I, for years, I've been trying to watch if people are going to use this technology in the way that it could be used to make connections across the globe in real time, and I just think it's very cool.
It is very cool.
And the other thing is that when I first got grabbed by Ramana Maharshi and then came across Gangaji and Papaji and finally you actually on a random YouTube web search, I've realized that I've always, from when I was very, very small, wondered who I was. That's been a question that's been in my back of my mind for as long as I think I've had a mind. And so the last thing I just wanted to say was a report that I've been practicing, not practicing, but I've been doing what you suggested in one of your podcasts, which is to spend 15 minutes every day just looking at, you know, the raw experience of being, and then throughout the day, whenever it occurs to me, just taking the medicine. And I was doing one of these meditations, morning meditations, and having a big, huge experience, which luckily, when those big experiences come, I've been able to put them aside and go, okay, that's great, but let's just keep looking at what's here. And the ego voice sort of came up, and the fears about, well, what if I just let go completely, and what will I be at risk, and will I be hurt, and if I just sink into this? And then the other kind of sort of coachy kind of voice came up and said, no, it'll be okay, you'll just let go. And then it just occurred to me, who's saying all this? And after that happened, it just kind of stopped, and the rest of my, you know, I can't say that anything changed, but I can just say that, I'm just very happy to keep looking at who I really am and being just aware of being here, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome, and the fact that you can say that I can't say that anything really changed is points to the authenticity of the report. Because that's, in my experience, and in the experience of most of the people that I have contact with, the most startling discovery is that nothing changes except what's changing all the time anyway. That it is just as Ramana has said, that always you are the self. Always you are peace and freedom. Never is there a moment when you are not that. And the states of mind and the thoughts and the desires and the expectations and the hopes and the fears and all of those things that come and go within the mind, none of those have to stay or go. You are as you are, as you have always been. And it's also very... it's really true. You say your sense is that from the time you were a child that you always wondered who you were. And that's really true. That's all we're ever doing. That's my experience. And if you look at even at the culture, the larger culture around us in which these lives appear and relate and so forth, you see that everywhere the expressions have to do with trying to tell you what you are or trying to encourage you to be something that you should be or not to be something that you shouldn't be, and that all of our lives, in my experience, every thought, every desire, every movement, every action, every reaction, all of it has been in service to try to create some identity that is satisfactory, and that the attempt to create a satisfactory identity out of the life, the mind, the personality, must fail, and always does fail. But it is driven by this pure desire to see what I am. And once it comes to pass that we are directed to where to look for this, well, we know this is what we've always wanted. This is what we have always sought. I also agree with you that Ramana is a hero. Ramana is a hero. Ramana was uninterested, really, in spiritual development, or uninterested in anything other than suggesting to people that it's possible for them to see the truth of what they are, and the truth of what they are is always free. And that's so unlike anything else of his time. He's my hero, too. So thank you.
I have a lot of heroes in my life, and he's definitely a big one. But I just wanted to speak back to something that you said. I grew up in California, and my mother is, you know, had me during the 60s and all that business, and when I was really young, I was at a party with my mom at one point, and because my mom took me everywhere with her, despite the fact that at that time it was normal to leave your kids at home. And we were at a party, and somebody was going on about just moving to California to try and find themselves, and I took my mother to the side. This is at about 5 years old, and I just asked, Mom, is he okay? Is he kind of crazy? Because he's right here. So, anyway, thank you so much for this time.
Okay. Anything else? Travis?
Oh, no, John, thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, now we have Jim from Arizona, and he sent a text message. And here's his message. Nisargadatta talks about doing self-inquiry in your spare time, since we live our busy lives doing things. When I first read that, I thought it might have been a translation problem. But you have said something like that, to do it when you have time. Did I understand you correctly? And if so, can you talk about how to use your spare time in self-inquiry?
Yes, that's very true, Jim, and that is what I say. And what I mean by that is this. There's no need to set aside any particular time to do self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is nothing more than the momentary glimpse of the reality of what you are. So there's no need to set aside a special time for it. There's no need even to anticipate under what circumstances self-inquiry can be undertaken. If you are standing in the line in the supermarket waiting to check out, and it occurs to you to see, just in that second, to look to see the reality of what you are, just do so. I mean, you're never absent. You're always available. It doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing. It doesn't matter what thoughts or what desires or what aversions are coming and going in your mind. Still, you are here, always here, never absent. So what I mean when I suggest that people do this, whenever it occurs to them to do so, is that they do it whenever it occurs to them to do so. In the line at the supermarket, waiting at the traffic light, stewing over some wrong that's been done to you, wishing you were somewhere else, whenever it occurs to you to do so. Whenever the thought arises in your mind, well, what am I? Look and see. What are you? You are here, always. always. And the point of this is not to change anything in your life. The point of this is to rid yourself of the idea, the belief, the unconscious, unseen belief that you are your life and nothing else. So anytime, going to sleep at night, waking up in the morning, eating breakfast, brushing your teeth, standing in the line at the supermarket, driving in the traffic jam, anytime, take a second, just a second. It doesn't take a prolonged attention. Just a second. Take a second and say to yourself, what am I really? Am I here? What is it to be here? What does that feel like, to be here? Do I know I'm here? What does that feel like, to know I'm here? Just a second. And if you do this, I promise everything will come out right. You could do it. You also can sit for a long time looking at yourself. But that's not necessary. Anytime, whenever it occurs to you, look at yourself. Okay?
Okay, now we have Suzanne calling from Calgary, Canada, but she doesn't seem to have a microphone. She sent a text message. I'll read you her message. Dear John, I've been with you a long time. I get the simplicity of this teaching. Sometimes I wonder if I will live long enough to rid myself of the mistaken belief that I am this life, this person. I can't gauge if this belief is weakening over time. Wouldn't one become less miserable as time goes on with self-inquiry? I hate this. It seems so pointless. Why the heck are we doing this? I know. The only answer to why is why not. But it doesn't help.
Oh, Suzanne, it is so hard for me to believe that you don't have a microphone. Now Suzanne says, I never hooked it up. Well, okay, Suzanne, I wish you had a microphone so that we could have a conversation here, but what do you think? See, this is the thing. What do you think it would feel like? How would you know whether you were making progress in eradicating a belief that you can't even see to begin with? I never claim that you can see the belief that you are your life. So how are you looking for something to happen? And it's not? Are you affected by the things that happen in your mind, Suzanne? It is, but it feels horrible, Suzanne says. And are you touched by the horrible feeling? Right now, does it feel horrible right now? I'm reading a text message from Suzanne, everybody. She says, yes, I am affected. Yes, touched. Right now, is a horrible feeling present right now? Why do I cry all the time? Yes, crying now. Cry too much. Yes, now. Now, while this horrible crying feeling is present, can you just look for just a second and look at the certainty that you are. Just look at that. Just for a second. Can you do that? What's not there? You think you're not here? Is there a possibility that you're not, that you're absent? That's for certain, right? She says, I'm here. That's for certain, right? Of course, it's nothing you can see or touch. The horrible feeling you can see and touch, though, right? You can see and touch the feeling of horror. Well, I don't know what the difference is between feeling it or seeing and touching it. Let me get straight here. Are you aware of the absolute certainty that you are here? Okay. Is that any different now than it is when you are feeling good in your life? Okay. This is what I am asking you to look at as often as you can. And not in order to rid yourself of the horrible feeling. The horrible feeling will go. It has come and it will go. The good feeling has come and it will go. What I'm asking you to look at is this certainty of your existence and see that no matter what's happening in your mind, that stays exactly the same. It never changes. Just for a second to look at that. It's not going to rid you of the horrible feeling. It's not going to make... That's right. It's not going to stop the desire to kill off this stupid story and body. And it's not going to make the good feelings that come also stay. That's not what we're trying to do here. What we're trying to do here is rid you of the belief that you are the one who has the desire to kill off the stupid story and body. And we can't rid you of that belief by talking you out of it. We can't rid you of that belief by giving you a new practice that'll make that horrible feeling go away. The only way to rid you of that belief is the repeated contact with reality, which is this unchanging certainty that you are. What ridding yourself of that belief does is suck the juice out of the desire to kill off this stupid story and body. It sucks the juice out of it. It sucks the juice out of the horror. It removes from you the idea that you are at stake in this. That's what it does. Yes, it does have to come to an end. The years and years of fruitlessness. The way to bring it to an end, Suzanne, I swear to you, is to take this medicine. When the horror is the greatest, stop for a second and look at what doesn't change. Just for a second. Do that as often as you can. When you're feeling good, stop just for a second. Look at this reality that you are, just for a second. It's not going to be like something that will wipe out everything. You've got to do it over time. You have to do it over time. You have to do it whenever you can. Of course you believe me. You know it's true. And it, the only thing that can, you have to see something else too, Suzanne, and that is there is within this personality that is the subject of this belief, there is within this personality a deep, abiding affection for the the tragedy of Suzanne. A deep, abiding affection for the drama and the melodrama of Suzanne. And that's okay, too. That can't hurt you. Just look and see. When it feels the worst, don't look and see to make the bad feeling go away. That's what all the other ones tell you. Just look and see. Yes, you're attached to the story, or you wouldn't keep it so long. Just look and see. Even the attachment to the story can't hurt you. Just in the midst of seeing that, in the midst of all of it, just look and see if you are not here. Look and see if this certainty that you exist is not the same as it has always been. And this is what's so hard to hear, I think. That's not in order that you can talk yourself out of being in love with the story, talk yourself out of the melodramatic relationship with the story. It's not in order to do that at all. It's in order to gradually, over time, erode away the belief that this story is you. But you got to do it, Suzanne. You got to take the medicine. You have to. Maybe we could talk on the phone, since you haven't managed to get your microphone. No, it's not. You know, I mean, yes, you are peaceful. You are peaceful. But that's not the point. The point is what you are. The point is not to gain peace, but to lose this false idea. And only the truth can rid you of this false idea. Yeah, I miss you too. Reflect on what was said here today, okay? And email me, and we'll set up a phone call. I really want to talk to you. It's to be expected. The draw of the drama of personality is huge, huge. It's the pull of it is very big. But as you can see directly for yourself, even that doesn't hurt you, doesn't touch you, doesn't change you. So call me. Write to me. We'll set up a phone call. Okay, anybody else?
Yes, we have David in New York, and he doesn't have a microphone, and he sent you a message. And I'll read it to you. Do you believe that the date and time of our realization of what we are is predetermined in the dream? What is the point of making an effort or having the urgency of a drowning man seeking air, as Ramana described it, in doing any practice at all? Especially, what is the point of that efforting if our nature is effortlessness? Who is it that needs to make this effort to know what he or she is? It seems that the whole idea of efforting is related to the belief that our time is running out and we won't realize what we are in time and we might have to return to do this again, blah, blah, blah. All of these are concepts, are they not? Thank you, John.
Yes, everything you said is a concept. What is the name here?
David.
David. Everything you said is a concept. The fact remains that whether we're running out of time or not running out of time, whether we will come back or won't come back, the fact remains that in this moment, many people in this world are filled with sadness and misery and hopelessness. And these lives are great gifts of God, and they need not be wasted. They need not be wasted on foolish misery and suffering. The I have very little interest in matters having to do with whether the date and time of realization is predetermined. The date and time of realization is now. There's never a date and time when you are not fully aware of reality. It's only the personality, it's only the personality which itself is shaped only by forces that it has nothing to do with. It's only within the personality that this idea of suffering and misery and hopelessness and the need to escape appears. The personality itself is an instrument of awareness. It is eyes and ears, nose and tongue of awareness. The personality itself is an instrument. The point of the inquiry is not to gain realization, because as Ramana also says, if realization is something that can be gained, then it must also be something that can be lost. Realization is your nature. It never changes. It's never absent. It's never gone. It needs nothing. It is your nature. It is also your nature that if you find a creature that is in pain, you will make some effort to ease its pain, whether it's a creature in a dream or not. So ease your own pain. Ease the pain of your personality, whether it's a dream creature, an illusory being or not. Have it look for the reality of what it is and rid itself of the belief that it is this life. What's so hard about that? What does that matter? If that is predetermined, if the date and time of that idea arriving is predetermined, then the date and time that was predetermined is now. Efforting, not efforting, what is that to you? The self needs nothing. It is only the personality that suffers. If the personality is to engage in endless effort in order to find satisfaction and fulfillment in things that cannot provide it with satisfaction and fulfillment, then at least give it the direction that will provide it with satisfaction and fulfillment. And let it expend its effort fruitfully rather than fruitlessly. You are here. You are never absent. The perfect, absolute, total awareness of the reality of what you are is ever present. Personality is your instrument. Let it see the truth. See what happens. What else is there to do with your time? It's not a matter of running out of time. It's a matter of, well, I'd rather play baseball than dig ditches. It's a matter of preference. And I guarantee you that the personality much prefers to be finished with this false belief than to be still saddled with it. So be kind. Okay? Anybody else?
Yes, Tom, in England, he says he would like to ask another question.
Hi, Tom.
Hello again. I'll try and keep it brief because obviously you've already spoken to me. I don't want to be too greedy.
It's okay.
Basically, as you know, I'm doing this inquiry and that's not anything to worry about or anything like that, you know. But I'm just thinking these intellectual clouds of doubt, if I could use you to get rid of them, then maybe the thought to look at myself would come up more often. So I guess what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to figure out the difference between me and you. I mean, I know ultimately no difference. You know, there is only one existence or awareness, whatever you want to say. And that's this now. It's not changing. I can see that. I can see I'm not changing one bit in any way. So it's the mind that's going to be different when this false belief is eradicated. So I'm just trying to work out in what way. I mean, are you is your mind constantly aware in each moment that the person is not where this identity comes from? In every moment.
I cannot tell you whether there is a difference between you and I, because I find nothing anywhere other than I. But I can tell you that what is not present in this mind is the sense that I am at stake here, that there is something really important going on in this mind. What is not present in this mind is the sense that I am at stake and that I have to keep a close watch on everything to make sure that the thoughts that I think are correct and they are in conformance with correct ideas, to make sure that the desires that arise within me are good desires and not bad desires, to make sure that no aversions come within me, because, I mean, aversions are bad. I don't pay much attention whatsoever to what happens in this mind. So, just because I don't. Things come and go here. Thoughts come and go. States come and go. Sometimes I feel good, sometimes I feel not so good. But just like you, there's never a time when I am not aware of reality. Never a time. The only difference might be this underlying sense that something's at stake here. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I get you. Well, thanks a lot. I'll continue with the medicine.
Okay.
Okay, we have Wabi in Miami, Florida. And it's also a text message in two parts. So, the first part: what is the evidence that comes to show me that my self-aware attention is bringing some result in my life? How do I know that this activity is useful? And then later on he continues: many of us seem to be looking for a way to know that looking at who I am is somehow producing a result that is valuable. Taking a medicine for months or years so that someday it may yield a usefulness is hard to follow.
I can tell you this. What's the name again?
Wabi.
I can tell you this, Wabi. And that is, the more time you spend looking for a positive effect in your life from self-inquiry, the longer it takes. The only effect in your life, nothing changes except that which changes. The only effect that you can expect over time is losing of the idea that I am at stake in this life. That's all. And that's all, but that's everything, really. It's my experience that over time, the effect of the inquiry is to allow you to actually relax into your life, to fall back into your life with an intimacy that is unimaginable when this conviction that you're at stake in your life is present. As so long as this idea that I am my life is playing, then what is also playing is a conviction that I have to be really careful what I do, what I think, that I don't waste my time, that I don't do something that's not going to provide me with benefit, that I think the right thoughts, that I get rid of the wrong thoughts, that I have the right relationships, that I have the right spiritual practice. That if I am not really careful, something terrible is going to happen to me. Don't know exactly what it is, but something terrible is going to happen to me. So I never get the chance to just kind of settle back and relax and live my life, or let my life live itself and enjoy it for what it is. In the end, so long as you, if you do not see that the ridding yourself of a false belief is of value, then you won't do the inquiry. And that's okay too. Because whether you do the inquiry or do not do the inquiry, you remain the same. Whether you continue to suffer or stop suffering, you remain the same. You are neither helped nor hurt by any of that. So, if you want to do the inquiry, I encourage you to do so, and I offer you all of my support and all the help that I can give you to pursue this path. If not, that's okay too. There's no... You lose nothing. You gain nothing with the inquiry. You lose nothing without the inquiry. The only thing you lose is this idea that you're at stake in this life. The only thing you lose is the distance that now exists between you and your life, the sense of separation between you and your life. I hope that's helpful to you. Okay. I appreciate you too, Weiby. Do keep it going. Let me know how you're doing. I mean that. Okay, who else?
Now we have Chris calling from Melbourne, Australia. Chris?
Hi, Chris. Well, Chris, I guess you're having trouble with your voice. Maybe you could send a text message. If you can't find a way to speak, then send a text message. I guess so. Chris, do you have push to talk? Oh, here's a text message. I am curious about how you became certain about this. I became certain about this by doing it. I was in a desperate spiritual state, and I decided that I would, if it killed me, I would find out what it was that Ramana was talking about. And in the course of trying, without much skill, to try to find out what Ramana was talking about, I happened upon this reality, this fact, this reality that if I would just look at myself as often as I can, the more I looked at myself, the less distance there was between me and my life. The more I enjoyed my life, the less seemed to be at stake in my thoughts and my ideas. The less I seemed to be on the line here. So I became certain about it by doing it. And then I discovered that what I really wanted to do now was to make this offering to everybody in the world, so that everybody in the world at least has the chance to try this or not try it, to try it or not try it. Okay, anything else? Well, thank you. I hope I am doing a good enough job anyway. Chris, is there anything else? Anybody else?
Yes, we have a text message from Tina. Not sure where she is. She didn't say. She has a question about the byproduct of self-inquiry, the bliss that is present when there is no I thought. And she asks, is this mind?
Yes, this bliss and all bliss, anything whatsoever that was not here and now is here, is mind. Anything. All bliss, all torment, all sweetness, all sourness, all of this is mind. The entire cosmos that you see and relate to is mind. And that doesn't make it bad. You see, one of the things that one of the things that's happened to us in the spiritual realm is we've come to this idea that mind is the problem, and that the unreliability of mind is the problem, and that's just not true. Mind is not a problem. Mind is nothing at all. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. The problem is the belief that you are a mind. That's all. Mind's not a problem. Bliss isn't a problem. The presence of bliss, the absence of bliss, none of that's a problem. All of it's beside the point. The problem is the belief that that's you, or that you are subject to that. And the solution to that problem is to look to see the reality of what you are. If the problem is a false belief about what you are, the only solution is the truth of what you are. And whether bliss is here or bliss is gone, you remain. You never change. You are unaffected by bliss. You are unaffected by torment. Look and see if that's not true.
Warwick is calling from Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, hi, John. I've been listening to your podcasts and all the other talks for quite some time. Well, quite some time, about a fortnight now. And I must say, I find it delightful.
Well, I'm glad. Is there any help I can be to you?
Well, there's something I'd like to raise now. This was helpful to me, very helpful to me. Now, it may not be helpful to others, but I'd like to raise it, if that's okay.
Okay.
Some time ago, I decided that there had to be some understanding which would clarify what this life was about, so I set about traveling around the world to meet people who thought they could, they had the understanding and could tell me. Now, I met this one guy down in Australia, and he said, one of the things you have to do is find out who you are. I thought, okay, that's fair enough. And I went home, and I spent quite a deal of time becoming very clear about what I ordinarily think I am. Body, mind, I'm a human animal, all this kind of stuff. But I put a lot of effort into it. I devoted myself to it nonstop for about 2 or 3 weeks. You know, if you consider people who practice saying mantras for 20 years, 2 or 3 weeks is not very long. But on the other hand, it was genuine inquiry. It was my inquiry. It was my own genuine inquiry. It was not just following somebody else's instructions. It was my own activated inquiry. Okay, you still there?
I am.
Okay. Now, you might say, well, what I was doing was just devoting a lot of attention to what I'm not. And in a sense, that's true. But, you know, it was like being on a swing. The way a swing works, in order to go forward, you have to go backwards. You have to go backwards to the fullest extent, and you build up this kind of energy, and when that energy is released, you go forward to the fullest extent, to the other extreme. And because I spent all this time making a huge inquiry and putting this huge effort into finding out what I ordinarily think I am, then, some years later, when I was given the right nudge by somebody else, I was able to see, ah, that's not what I am at all. What I really am is this. Something, as it were, at the other extreme. So to me, that was very, very helpful indeed.
Well, I don't have any problem with any of that, except the only thing I have to say about all of that is that what I am asking all to do is not to gain the understanding of what they are. I mean, I don't have any problem with it, but that's not what I'm about. It's not that I am suggesting that, okay, what for up until now we have believed ourselves to be this, and there's nothing wrong with expending effort to determine the things that you believe yourself to be, the conglomerate of phenomena that you believe yourself to be. But what I'm suggesting is not that, and that's one part of it, right? I mean, we already have some shifting sense of what we believe ourselves to be as these personalities. And there's nothing wrong with making that more explicit and more clear. But what I'm suggesting is not that we substitute that understanding, whether the understanding is deep and clear or fleeting and not so clear, that we substitute that understanding for a new understanding that this is what I am. This, oh, I see this. Now I get it. That's what I am. Because that understanding and that recognition itself is something that was not here and then appeared within the mind and now is present in the mind and but will eventually depart. What I am suggesting is that we rid ourselves of the false idea, the false belief. Not that we gain new understanding within this belief about what I am, but that we, at the source, cut off the belief. Not that we change the characteristics of the personality that I believe myself to be, but that we destroy the belief, which itself is unseeable. It can't be understood. It can't be seen. It can't be, because it is the lens through which we see everything. And what I have found in my own life and in my own practice is that the only thing that will rid me of that belief is repeated contact with reality. Not in order to gain a new understanding of reality, because the truth is that I have no understanding at all of reality. None. None. But the repeated contact with reality does the work of eroding away this underlying lens, this belief that I am my life. And it's not, it will not necessarily or even likely give rise to a new understanding of my identity, because I already know what I am. I have always known. I am, there's nothing to me in reality but the awareness of me. So I just want to be clear as to what it is that I offer. And what it is I offer is not the gaining of the correct identification, because the correct identification is already forever present. What I offer is the eradication of the false. And that can go whether I have any understanding at all whether I have full understanding or no understanding, that belief can be disposed of. And in the absence of that belief, everything is the same and everything is different. Do you follow me?
Well, there's some things which are a little difficult, and it could be just that, you know, we're talking about it now, and when we're talking we have to use words, and it's always difficult when you use words because a word might mean something to you and it means something different to me. So,
that's why we talk.
Exactly.
Yes, that's why we talk, yeah.
Now, you say you don't understand what you are, but you know what you are.
I say less than that. I say that all I am is the knowing of what I am. There's nothing else to me but that. All the rest is...
But you also said you don't understand what you are.
Right. How could I?
Okay. Well, when you use the word know and the word understand, I think that creates difficulties. So, we could just stop using the word understand, and I could say, I became very clear about what I ordinarily think I am. I gained a very clear knowledge of what I ordinarily think I am, and then I gained a clear knowledge of what I really am.
Well, that's
but
possible.
Gaining a clear knowledge of what I thought I was very helpful, a very helpful step in becoming clear about what I really am.
I'm not denying that, and I'm not even speaking to the issue of gaining an understanding of what you thought you were.
Let's drop the use word understanding. I was rephrasing
it
without using the word understanding.
What I am saying is that you did not gain a knowing of what you really are. That knowing of what you are is always here.
I think we're sort of, again, getting lost in words, because there is a difference between someone who thinks that he is an animal, that thinks he is a human animal, that thinks he's a mind, that thinks he's memory, that thinks he's experience, who thinks he's actions, who thinks he's a life in time. There's a difference between that sort of outlook, if you like, or knowing, and the knowing that what you are is changeless, that what you are is incapable of change, is always the same, doesn't come, doesn't go, and is eternal in the true sense of the word eternal. There's a difference.
And who is it that has this knowing?
This knowing knows itself.
And has that ever been absent?
The person doesn't know.
Right, so has that ever been...
The knowing knows itself.
And has that ever been absent?
Well, it can be, as it were, overlaid by
but is it ever
fascination.
Absent?
It's never absent, but it's overlaid. It's like, a chocolate veneer on something else. It's never not there, what is at the core, but it can be lost sight of.
Well... I see we're having some kind of an attack here on the channel, but that's okay too. Well, here's the thing, Warwick. What I want of people and what I have to offer people is the possibility of seeing that there is never a time when you are not fully realized and fully aware of reality. And this is the reason why I really spend very little time engaged in talk about these things. Because it is as you say. Once we start talking to each other and using words, we are bound to get lost in a forest of words. what I hope to offer people is the possibility in their own life in this moment of seeing that there has never been a moment when they have not been the reality of what they are, and that that is untouched and unaffected by anything whatsoever that happens in the personality, by anything that happened in the past, by anything that's happening now, or by anything that might happen in the future. And I'm quite certain that it's possible that we are talking about the same thing, but it is, as you say, once we start talking, we get lost in a forest. You are reality itself. You have never been other than that. I know that. I have always known that. I have never not known that. Okay? Are you with me, Warwick?
If everybody always knows, always has known, always will know exactly what they are, what's the point of your work?
The point of my work is to bring to people the possibility of being finished with that false belief. That's all. Nothing more than that. It's not to bring them new understanding or new experiences or new anything, but just to bring them the possibility of being finished with the false belief that they are their lives. Because, you see, we are truly not two. And so long as the idea, the thought exists in any human mind that I am bound, that I am subject to the horror of life, so long as that thought exists in any human mind, it exists in this mind. And I don't seek to bring people new ideas, just to rid them of that belief and see what happens. What else am I going to do with my time?
What I asked you was, if everybody always understands, always sees, always knows exactly what they are, then there's no point in your doing this, because everybody already knows, any race. Everybody, you can't, on the one hand, be absolutely clear about what you actually are, and on the other hand, at the same time, entertain false ideas about what you are, or any ideas about what you are.
Well, there's a difference in what you're speaking of, and this is where, again, we come to this difficulty with using words to try to speak about these things. There's a difference between ideas and this belief that I'm talking to. This belief is not an idea in the normal sense that we use the word idea. This belief is the underlying lens through which we see everything, through which we see all ideas and all beliefs. And it is this underlying lens that I seek to see eliminated. And the reason for this is, if I see anybody suffering, wouldn't you help them? Whether it's a suffering in a dream or an illusion or in any other venue, if you see anybody suffering, wouldn't you feel impelled to help them, to ease their pain, to ease their mind? You know, it's
John, you're not really. I put something to you, and you're not really dealing with it.
Try it again. Try one more time.
What I'm saying is this. It's true that what one really is, what you really are, what I really am, is always present, has never not been the case, and never will not be the case. And is not, as you say, is not affected by passing states of happiness and unhappiness. Passing states of happiness and unhappiness come and go in the mind, but what you really are is not affected by what comes and goes in the mind. What you really are is always permanently, solidly, immovably, unchangeably here now. We're agreed on that. However, it's possible, shall we say, if we look at things from the viewpoint of a person, it's possible for a person to be aware of that or not aware of that. And I think it's good that somebody can be aware of that. And that awareness destroys the belief that one has or the ideas that one has that one is a human, that one is a human animal, that one is a thinking being, that one is a feeling being, that one is this body-mind entity. So I'm not saying that what one really is an idea. I'm not saying that what one really is a mental construct. It's something that is seen. And when it's seen, it puts to rest, as it were, the idea that one is a human, that one is a person, that one is an acting being, that one is an experiencing being. These are, you know, you see through that, as it were. And I think it's good to see through that. I think it's good to see through. I think it's good to just, see, yes, this is what I am. And when you see, yes, this is what I am, then the false ideas about what you are lose their power. They may not totally vanish immediately, but they've been nobbled. They've been emasculated. They've had their balls cut off, if you'll forgive the expression.
So how's that any different than what I say? That's exactly what I'm saying. Except that I don't think there's plural ideas. I think there's just one false belief. But other than that, it's exactly what I'm saying. What's the difference? I agree with you.
Well, the difference is that when I put forward this proposition that it's good to see who you really are, you poured cold water on it.
Oh, well, I must have misunderstood you. That happens. Because I don't have any problem at all with what you just said. That's exactly what my work is. I must have misunderstood. I'm very sorry about that. Okay? Warwick?
Yes, are you there?
Yes, I said I must have misunderstood. So,
well, what I replied to that was, well, the misunderstanding has been cleared away, and I've enjoyed our conversation very much.
Okay, me too.
I think it's, okay.
Go on.
Thank you very much, John. Bye-bye.
Go on, what were you going to say?
No, I wasn't going to say anything more. I'm just, but it's a good thing to clear away misunderstandings. It's very good. It's in a sense of the word that everybody can agree with. It's an enlightening thing to do.
It's excellent. I look forward to speaking to you again. I look forward to hearing from you by email again, too.
Yes, I will send you more emails.
Okay. Thank you, Warwick. I believe there's one other... Yeah?
Just one thing?
Yeah.
this, I've taken a lot of note of what you say of constantly reverting to this seeing of what you are, of constantly going back to it. Yes, I know that I exist. If there's anything, it's the one thing which can't be doubted, which I exist. You say, I'm here. I say, I exist. I think that amounts to the same thing, doesn't it?
It is the same thing. I often say it. I often say it your way, too.
And since I've been listening to your podcast, I've been doing that quite a lot. And it's good. Thank you, John. Thank you, John. It's a very good suggestion.
Okay, thank you very much, Warwick. And we have one more, right, Carla?
Yes, we have a message from Larry in Gloucester, Virginia. And here it is. I thought of something. Oh, sorry. Some of the teachers in the past, such as Nisargadatta and Papaji, told their students to spend time with them in physical satsang. And that the time spent in the presence of one who has destroyed the belief that they are their life would help the student make quicker progress. If I came to visit John in his public satsang in California, would that speed my progress? I live in Virginia, but I would come to California if it would help my self-inquiry.
All I can say, Larry, is that I was prevented from spending time with my teacher because I was in prison. I saw her twice, and then for 3.5 years, I was prevented from seeing her again. And I don't know whether that was good or bad. I think that if you think that it would be useful for you to come and see me, you should come and see me. And I also, however, it's also my continuous understanding that we don't have much to say about these things anyway. I suggest to you that if you show up here in Ojai, you will be here, and if you don't, you won't. But whether you do or do not, whether you come to see me or do not come to see me, the fact is that you are never absent from yourself. So that all, Nisargadatta, Papaji, all agree that the true guru is yourself. And by that, what's meant is that the true dispeller of darkness is the reality of what you are. And that is available to you in Gloucester, Virginia, in Ojai, California, with me present, without me present, any time at all. The most important thing to do is to, whenever it occurs to you to do so, look at this certainty that you are. Just look at it. Look at yourself, because that's what you are. And you're welcome to come to Ojai. You're welcome to stay in Virginia. But I don't think it matters. Okay, my friends. I guess there's nobody else that wants to... Oh, wait a minute. Is there somebody else? Guest 4, you don't have a microphone, so you can have a voice. I guess that's it. It's been a lively couple of hours here with you. Carla's saying something to me now.
There's one more person who sent a question /report. Can I read this from Eugene in Sarasota, Florida?
Yeah.
Hi, John. I've wanted to write or talk to you, but it's hard to ask you questions without feeling like I am wasting time. You are crystal clear and consistent, and I can hear your answers in my mind, but here goes anyway. Self-inquiry is supposed to be direct, immediate, but often asking, what am I, is not enough, and I have to go through a series of mental steps. Could this be in line with the looking?
Whatever seems to be the things that you're doing in the service to self-inquiry are beside the point. the only point of the inquiry is to bring yourself into the direct, immediate, unmediated seeing of reality. And what I mean by reality is this certainty that you are, that is always here. You are never absent. You can never deny that you are here. And it is that that I am speaking of when I speak about the reality that you need to see repeatedly, again and again. Anything you do that ends up with you face to face with this unspeakable reality is okay. Anything. Any train of thought, anything you do that ends up with you for just a second getting a glimpse of this presence that never changes is good and will do the job and will rid you of your misery in time. Okay, this has been a lively time. I see that we're here. Eugene, yes, please do email me your report. I don't know what to say except that I can never tell you how grateful I am to all of you for your willingness to be here and to consider together with me reality, to consider together with me the possibility that's before us always to be finished with falseness, to be finished with the false belief that I am my life, and in being finished with that false belief, to rid my life of its misery and suffering and confusion. I am very happy to be with you, and I am grateful to you. I have one more text message from guest 4, who says, "What do you think about self-karma? I'm not sure what you mean by self-karma, but the personality is made up of karma, by which I mean the personality is formed and changes shape and is ever shifting as a result of the forces of the entire manifestation of the universe, of all the actions that have been done by everything in the universe. Ramana calls this Prarabdha, which is past action bearing fruit now. And it is of no consequence. It has no meaning. It is beside the point. You, the reality of what you are, is not subject to these things. If you look and see at this certainty of your own existence that underlies everything and that never changes, you will see that no matter what happens, you are untouched, unmoved. You are neither helped nor hurt by any of it. So the whole question of karma is beside the point, really. And David, I see your message. I never thought that you were being unkind. I find myself letting go of the sense of effort. Well, the only thing I say is that it is to be expected, I promise you, it is to be expected that the sense of effort will leave you as you do inquiry. And eventually what will also leave you is the idea that you are letting go of anything. The sense of effort will leave you. It is part of the sense that something is at stake here, that you have to do this rather than that. But certainly the feeling of effort will go. That's one of the consequences, the outcomes of the inquiry. That's it. No more. Oh, I guess I'm lying. One more.
Teresa in New Zealand is asking to speak.
Okay. Teresa? Uh-huh. You're trying to speak but can't. Okay, well, if Teresa can't speak, perhaps you can send a text message, Teresa. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, then. Teresa, everyone, I love you all. Guess what? What is your job? This is my job. This is what I do. I don't know what you mean when you say you don't understand the site. Email me, johnsherman@riverganga.org, and I will do my best to help you understand the site. I'm going to go now. I am worn out. I am worn out with the joy of being with you all. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm so happy for your willingness. I'm out of words. I'm out of anything to say. Please stay in touch with me. Please let me know how you're doing. And guess three, I have to say that koans, to break the cycle, to merge with the truth, there's no cycle that needs to be broken. All that needs to be broken is the belief that you are something other than this reality. I love you all. I am so happy to be with you. Everybody, keep up the good work and let me know what you're doing. Let me know how you're doing. Om Shanti. Thank you for this satsang.
Thank you for being here with us today. It is really wonderful to meet with you all like this. Our next worldwide meeting in Satsang with John will be on August 26th at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. There are many resources that are available on our website at www.riverganga.org that can give you support during the times between our online satsangs. This room, where we're meeting right now, is open 24/7, and you can use it to talk about self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi and to share your experiences with one another. You can also use this room at any time to check and configure your computer settings ahead of time before our Sunday meetings. You can listen to recordings of meetings in Satsang with John on the podcast page on our website. And there you can also sign up to receive notifications by email when a new file is uploaded. We have a discussion forum called Conversations, where you can be in touch with people all over the world who are in Satsang with John. You can go to our website and look for the link Conversations under the menu Community. You can order video and audio recordings of meetings in Satsang with John on our website. Just click on Supporting Satsang on the top navigation bar to go to our store. You can find detailed information about meetings in Satsang with John. Click on Satsang Events on the top navigation bar and then on Schedule, where you'll find updated information about his schedule. You can listen to recordings of past worldwide satsangs with John on our archives page. Click on Library and then choose World Meetings Archives. The recording of today's meeting will be available in a few days. You can read complete transcriptions of meetings in Satsang with John. Just click on Library and then Transcriptions. You can also sign up to receive our monthly email newsletter with news about meetings in Satsang with John and about the new additions to our website. Click on Community on the top navigation bar and then on Newsletters. You can read John's blog and post your comments there at www.johnsherman.org. Our next 5-day silent retreat will be from November 2nd through 6th at the Meditation Mount here in Ojai, California. It is filling up quickly. Registration is free. And if you're planning to join us for this retreat, you have to email me or call me to register. For more information, please go to our website and click on the Satsang Events and navigate through the events until you get to the retreat. Or you can call me at 805-646-0994. And remember, you can always email John with your reports and questions at johnsherman@riverganga.org, and he'll be happy to receive your email. All meetings in Satsang with John are free of charge. Our work is entirely supported by donations. The River Ganga Foundation is a 501c3 public nonprofit organization recognized by the IRS. All donations to the foundation are tax deductible according to IRS regulations. More information is available at www.riverganga.org/support with a capital S. We look forward to being with you at our next worldwide meeting in Satsang with John on Sunday, August 26th at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Thank you all very much for being here, and see you in 2 weeks.